All right, probably the most consequential game in the Pac-12 last week happened on Friday night in Corvallis. Utah, the clock finally struck midnight on their backup quarterback parade. Elsewhere, Colorado, after getting killed by Oregon, actually ended up having a close game at home against USC, so maybe, you know, not all is gone on those fronts. We're going to talk about all that and more in this week's Eligible Receivers. He's Eric. I'm Warren. Let's start the show.
Hello, blog fans.
Well, you work all week on trying to identify who the eligible receivers are.
This is Eligible Receivers, a show where we review last week's Pac-12 action, pick this week's games against the spread, and keep track of our picks over the course of the season. And as alluded to in the intro, we start off in Corvallis, where the Beavers hosted the going in undefeated Utes. Cam Rising still not back for Utah, and kind of, you know, play like a very Utah-y game, and maybe this is what Oregon State's going to be. This was not an incredibly high-scoring game. The Beavers end up winning comfortably by a couple scores, 21-7.
Yeah, you got to wonder if Cam Rising is going to play, you know. Like, he comes out and he warms up, but he's got a massive knee brace on. He doesn't, like, appear to be a guy who's ready. I mean, his deal was he was kind of the mobile guy, right? And it doesn't appear like that's the case anymore. Yeah, you know, like this would have been a game you figure, like, if he's ready to go, like, they're going to get him back in, and he's not. We're pushing halfway through the season here. Like, is the guy going to come back at some point, or are they just going to go the whole season pretending like he's going to play and then go with the backup?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder. I mean, I think I said it last week. I thought during the Florida game it was like, oh, we'll see him in a week or two. And then, you know, they get through Baylor, and then they're like, well, maybe not do it at Weber State. But then he doesn't play in UCLA or at Oregon State. We got problems here. And then, likewise, or kind of like similar to Utah, I think Oregon State has a real Utah-ish offense, you know?
Yeah, that DJU guys, he's like, okay. But I was surprised. I mean, they were kind of gashing Utah on the ground a little bit for a while there. I mean, I was surprised at how capable their running game looked. I mean, they didn't have, like, big numbers, but against Utah, you figured that was, like, the one thing that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I watched the game like you did. I mean, Utah just did not look good. It's the curse of the Friday night road game, man. Like, yep. You just can't go on the road. I mean, I said it last week as I was picking them to win. You can't go on the road in the Pac-12 on a Friday night against a competent opponent to win. I don't know that it's ever happened.
I agree. Give a shout-out to Silas Bolden for Oregon State. He had 100 yards on 6 receptions and a touchdown and added 53 yards on 2 carries and a touchdown. So, I mean, him by himself, he beats this team.
Yeah, yeah, that's not half bad. Let's see how long I make it this time before ESPN unmutes itself and then starts a different ad for me to listen to. Happened 3 times in the last 2 minutes. All I want to do is look at these scores. Keeps happening. Anyways.
I was wondering, mine, it's going to happen the rest of the recording tonight, but mine, it hasn't done that for me once this year. Next up, let's talk about that USC-Colorado game. So here's a game where Colorado, you know, some might say got exposed at Oregon the week before, me chief among them. They come back at home, and it looks like it's the exact same story. In the first half, it's USC 34, but Colorado does score twice in the second quarter to get to 34-14. And the second half, Colorado flat out, you know, I mean, they won it by a couple touchdowns. So the margin ends up being 7 points, which had to have been a Colorado cover, I would think.
By 20 points. I mean, they were, what is it? USC was, they were 21.5 point favorites. So yeah, that was a 15 point cover basically for Colorado there.
Yep. So still no Travis Hunter. But good, you know, I think that's a positive sign for Colorado after getting smacked the week before at Oregon. So, you know, proud for them. Good job by them to show some fight in this one, because this game, you know, just as easily given the previous week's result, they could have just folded. but they kept going and kind of sort of made it look like a game at the end, though I think USC ended up being pretty comfortable the entire time. So last week when USC, I mean, I guess we kind of have to say the same thing as we said last week with USC and what we're about to say about Washington, just win the game.
Yeah, I think the biggest concern for USC is, again, that defense, right? You know, like, Oregon held these guys, like Colorado, like, just snuffed them out. Like, there was nothing there. And USC, you know, has, like, a little bit lesser of a defense. They're on the road. You figure, like, okay, they went up big in the first half. But you don't want – I mean, Alex Grinch is not in a position at USC where he's got the luxury of giving up 41 points to Colorado. You know, like, you can't be doing that. So I think that's – The big concern is, I mean, you know, like, they put up 48 points on a what looks to be, like, you know, an okay Colorado team, but they put up 48 points and they only won the game by 6. That's not, like, you know, or 7. That's not a, like, you know, suggestive of a team that's going to the playoff, you know?
Yeah. I agree with that. You know, we'll see how it pans out, but they look like they're just going to get, you know, they're just going to have a bad turnover day, and their defense isn't going to be able to help them out. I will say about Caleb Williams, as, you know, being Washington fans, you know, we're firmly on the Pennix for Heisman train. Caleb Williams, like, made some plays in this game and makes some plays every so often that nobody else can make.
Yeah, I want to see him play a good defense, you know, because it's like that's where it gets, like, really cool, because it's half the time when you watch him make these plays, you know, it's like, oh, he escapes the pocket and he goes downfield. And you're like, but there's nobody around the wide receiver. You know, he's throwing. He's like, he's pitch and catch with a guy. It's like, I want to see him do that, break the pocket, and then he has to hit a guy in stride because there's a DB, you know, next to him. I'm not saying he can't. I know that he can do these things. But to me, that sort of, like, ups the wow factor. I saw him make some of these cool plays, but in some of them, it's just like, once he cuts loose with the ball, you realize, like, the defense had completely blown the coverage and the wide receiver was not guarded.
Yeah. What the specific things I'm thinking of are, like, sometimes on the rare occasions, given the teams they've played so far, when he gets kind of flushed out and has to improvise, the amount of zip he can generate on the ball from, like, awkward angles without his feet set is incredibly impressive.
Yeah. No, he's a baller. I don't think there's any question about that.
Very, very good. And then for Colorado, good bounce back game for Shedeur Sanders, who had 370 yards to Caleb Williams, 403. But yeah, I mean, I'd say, you know, good showing by Colorado, and you'd have to say USC took care of biz.
Yeah, agreed.
All right. And then here's a game. Let's talk about Cal and Arizona State. Two teams that were kind of like, we've decided that Arizona State is terrible.
They are.
And Cal is kind of – Arizona State and Stanford are the teams where we're like, uh-oh, the only ones that are kind of bad. Cal, you know, certainly in the lowest group that's not Arizona State and Stanford, but also not one of the good teams in the conference. I was going to say they're fighting for bowl eligibility. Their next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games are against ranked teams.
So, no, they're not.
Yeah, so no. But yeah, I mean, this was like, you know, Jaden Ott, who we didn't really see against Washington too much for whatever reason, he had kind of his sort of game where he carried the ball 29 times, 165 yards. That's a guy that if – is he a sophomore this year? I kind of think he is.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm saying – hate to say it in this modern day and age – portal alert.
Portal alert, man. Someone get that guy's agent on the horn. Like,
get him, get the checkbook together, Washington boosters.
Yeah. Jay Knott behind Michael Penix would look real nice. Or whoever Washington's quarterback is next year, because it's not going to be Penix.
Yeah.
He's the best player on their team. And, I mean, to ASU's credit, they kept this close. This wasn't, Cal was 12.5-point favorites, and they certainly, you know, did not cover. You know, ASU outperformed the betting public, you know, substantially in this game. So I think that's, you know, a positive if you're Kenny Dillingham. But this, I mean, this is, let's be honest, a game like only a mother can love this game. I mean, this is just two pretty terrible football teams getting together in a fairly empty Memorial Stadium there in Cal, in Berkeley. This is just a this is a rough football game.
It's a rough one, man. It's a rough one. We will say from last week or the week before, rather, when Washington beat Cal, and going back to the North Texas game, you and I were both talking about how much better Cal looks when Sam Jackson is playing. He took all the snaps in this game. The Cal coaches have come around.
And they won. How about that? Nice of Wilcox to do his former employer a favor at UW and play that other guy, because he wasn't very good.
He was not
I saw, I've seen tweets already this week being like, he's back in practice. So apparently he was injured and couldn't play for that reason. And so now they're like, well, maybe he'll come back. It's like, you win the games where you play the other guy. So, like, keep playing him, I guess, you know?
And then Oregon played Stanford at Stanford. I'm sure this had to be a drab affair for the home crowd. Oregon, extremely solid, 42-6 win, doing whatever they want. Went to the break only 14-6, but then Oregon, gentlemanly, you know, kind of piled up their margin in the third quarter, tacked on one touchdown in the fourth quarter. They win 42-6.
Yeah, I mean, that's all you can say about Oregon is it took them a while. They went down in this game. You know, Stanford kicked the first field goal. Stanford's first drive was like 7.5 minutes. They ended up with a field goal. Oregon goes three and out. Stanford gets the ball back. Stanford kicks a field goal. But it was just one of those things where you could just tell, like, you know, Oregon was completely disinterested. Stanford was not, you know, not capable of putting the ball in the end zone. It doesn't matter. Like, they could have kicked four field goals on their first four drives and been up 12-0, and you would have still had the same opinion of, like, Oregon's going to win this game by 20 points. You know, they won it by 35 points. So I think they just, you know, they got it together in the third quarter, as you said, and that was that.
Yep. All right, and that leaves us with Washington at Arizona. Washington went to Tucson. House of horrors, the desert is for the Dogs. They went down there. They end up winning 31-24, so I'm assuming they didn't cover. But I would say for, you know, they were pretty in control, I would say, for most of the game. I never really was sweating it.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is an interesting example of momentum.
Yeah.
In games, right? Because the Huskies, a couple of things happened, right? Like, they were firmly in control of the game, and they were going into the end zone to go up 38 to, I don't think Arizona had scored again yet, so I think it was like 30, it would have been like 38 to whatever, 16 at that point or something in that neighborhood. And they fumble. Washington fumbles on the one. Jeremy Bernard fumbles. You know, Arizona gets the ball back. I believe they go down and score, which brings it to the one. You know, during that drive, quarterback for Arizona threw a ball directly to a Washington defensive player, dropped it.
Oh, yeah.
Couldn't make the pick. And Arizona, you know, gets that touchdown to pull within one. You know, UW gets the ball back. Game ends. I mean, I think there was actually a couple more possessions after that. But it was, as you said, it was never really in doubt, but it was a lot closer than you'd like. But it's an interesting concept to me, because it's like, it just shows, you know, momentum can be a weird deal. If Jeremy Bernard doesn't fumble there and goes in, Washington wins going away, probably covers. They pick that ball when Arizona's driving, same deal. But it didn't happen, and Arizona comes back and gains the momentum. What I'll take from that is, like, sometimes you lose those games. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Happened to Oregon last year when Washington came into Austin Stadium. You know, Washington fumbled on their one. You know, Michael Penix threw a terrible pick on the one, basically.
Yeah.
Oregon had all the momentum in that game. For all the world, you thought Oregon was going to walk away and be another Oregon, you know, win over Washington. Then Penix threw that ball to Taj Davis on that long third down, goes 70 yards for a touchdown.
Yeah.
They tie it up. You know, Bo Nix got hurt. They couldn't move the ball. They went for it on fourth down, basically leaving Washington in field goal. I mean, it was like they lost the momentum and then they lost the game.
Yeah.
And so my only is just an interesting observation is that that I felt like from the game was like Washington lost the momentum, but they at least still won the game. You know, like, good teams need to win games where, you know, there's an ebb and a flow, and they, you know, they ended the game on an ebb and were still able to get, you know, a touchdown victory.
Yeah, and then what I took away from this game is that Arizona was the first team Washington played this year that said, you know, basically, come hell or high water, you are not beating us over the top. We're keeping two safeties back there. And left Washington to take the underneath stuff and rely on the run game more. Dylan Johnson probably had the best game for a running back for Washington this season, 16 carries for 91 yards. And Penix didn't force a thing. You know, I mean, he was 30 for 40. I mean, he ends up taking a shot on one of those last drives where Washington probably could have continued in the vein that they had been running offense the whole game and turned it into points, the last punt Washington had. But the strategy for Arizona meant long drives for Washington. Arizona was pretty well able to stay on the field. And so it just, you know, it basically kind of shrunk the game a little bit. Washington had limited possessions. They still did well with them, you know. I mean, Washington, their first half is they get the ball four times. It goes touchdown, 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 ran out of time at the end of the half. So, like, they had 3.5 possessions in the first half, or basically three in an incomplete possession in the first half. So, and they scored 21 points, which is as many as they were going to score. You know, that's all. That's as well as you can do with that limited time touching the ball. Ball changes hands a little more in the second half. Washington did have to punt twice, and they had that fumble by Bernard, which he mentioned. At that point, that would have made the score 38-17. And that would have been a fair reflection of kind of how I felt the game was going at that point.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then it just kind of gets gross at the end. On that last drive before the clock-killing drive at the end of the game, that was the only time where they dialed up a shot to Roma Dunze, who cares if he's covered. And I think they were trying to get Penix a touchdown. But they, up to that point, just took what was available to him. And I think we're, you know, for more or less dominating the game. I mean, I think, you know, clean up a couple pretty minor things and they win by a lot more. They won the game, which is all you can care about. And it feels fair to say that because we had that same reaction to USC kind of barely beating Arizona State in Tempe last week. Like, people who don't follow this conference don't understand that those games are inexplicably difficult.
It's true. And you mentioned Arizona's, like, game plan. It's the exact same game plan that Washington used to deploy against Mike Leach in Washington State every year in the Apple Cup, which is we're just going to go umbrella. You have to go dink and dunk. If you want to score, you're going to have to do 13, 14 play drives.
Yep.
And you can run the ball if you want. We'll dare you to do it. And Mike Leach, you know, year in and year out would fail that test because he refused to go with the running game, even when it was there. And in the passing game, he would take the underneath stuff, you know, or he'd have the quarterback take the underneath stuff for a while, but eventually he'd force it downfield. And that's where Washington had NFL safeties and, you know, cornerbacks all over the place. And it just never worked out for him, right? Like Byron Murphy and Buda Baker and like just bad idea. So, you know, Arizona doesn't have that talent in the secondary, but the principle is the same, right? They kept two safeties back and said, take the underneath stuff. And Penix did, and Grubb, the offensive coordinator, for most of the game, as you mentioned at the end, he didn't, but most of the game, let the running game, you know, do its thing. Washington had four touchdowns in this game. All four were on the ground. And so that's encouraging to me that they are willing to, when a team decides, like, that's it, you're not going over the top, that they can still get four or five touchdowns in the game and that they're willing to go to the run game, because we've seen this play out year after year in the Apple Cup, and Leach was not willing to do those things, and his team lost every time as a result.
Yeah, and still with – I mean, surely his lowest air yards per pass all season, Michael Penix still 363 yards through the air, an average of, you know, 9.1 yards per attempt. I mean, like, and this was all – none of this was like the big bombs that we see every other Washington game.
Yeah, another thing that I was thinking about is I've started to see questions or it's floating around a little bit that the schedule for next year might be coming out.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen that, but they're like Michigan's schedule next year is looking like it might be this. And then there's like a graphic with a bunch of teams on it, but
it's outrageous.
It's like UCLA, USC, Ohio State, Washington, Penn State, Maryland. It's like, I mean, it's like, these are, you know, Maryland's actually doing well this year. They're, you know, it's like, these are, you know, like the premier like, this is going to be a crazy schedule, right?
Yeah.
And so one thing that I like about these games that I'm seeing from Washington is, well, first of all, what that tells me is, like, Washington better pay Kalen DeBoer, man, because it is about to be all about coaching. All yeah. about coaching. You are not getting through that schedule on talent because there's going to be injuries all over the place. And so I think Penix's longest pass of the night in this game was to the backup tight end, Josh Cuevas.
Yeah.
Until a couple years ago, a couple weeks ago, I'd never heard of and didn't know he was on the team. And so one of the things I was heartened by is, like, that's probably a good thing that there's, you know, a third string or fourth string guy that's got that in him, because, you know, that not only understands the playbook well enough to be out on the field for those plays, but then that Penix will get him the dime, because in future seasons, to get through a schedule like the schedule I just saw that Michigan might play next year, like, you're going to need your third and fourth string guys on the field. And that is all going to be coaching, because it's going to be, you know, the third stringers, like, do you know how to run the routes? Do you know how to block, you know, pick up and pass pro? Do you know how to do these things?
Yeah.
And the talent disparity, which is already leveling out with NIL, is going to be even more, you know, level, because there's going to be injuries with playing those big time games week in and week out. UW's going to need guys like Cuevas and other guys, and they might need them anyways for the coming weeks. They've got big games coming week after week after week, starting, you know, this week, you know, after this week, after the bye.
Yeah, and the last thing I want to say about this one is that, save for the fumble, Jeremy Bernard, you know, we kind of got to look at what the number one receiver next year is going to be, and he was entirely adequate.
Yeah, real good.
Yeah.
Real damn good.
Good player. All right, so how are we doing picks last week?
Poorly. 2-3, you and me, and Worm, and Josh. And then everybody else went 3-2. So, you know, not great. You're still leading the league, 29-16. Tubby's right behind you, 28-17. Everybody else is behind you there a couple games.
I'm ready to blow it.
You got it. Well, you only got four opportunities to do that this week.
No. I can do it.
Yeah,
you can. Start it off at noon on your Pac-12 network. Washington State travels to Pasadena. Here's something I want to talk about before this game. Did you see there was somebody on some Colorado podcast, former player, that said he heard that Washington State were telling recruits that they're going to join the Big 12 next year?
That's what I'd be telling them too.
Yeah. But that's pretty brazen, right? You know what I mean? Like, to me, it makes all the sense in the world. I think Washington State's you know, for all the problems they have drawing fans, and I think I don't think that's entirely reflective of the level of support they have in this state. You know, like, there's a lot of damn Cougs around here, and they're proud to be Cougs. I think it's just a pain in the ass to get to Pullman. I think they are very much, like, equal to a Texas Tech or a Baylor or a Kansas. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, and they're better than, like, Iowa State.
Yeah. You know, to me, they're, like, a legitimate operation, and I think culturally they'd be a marvelous fit in the Big 12, and I think they deserve to be a Power 5 football team or however many leagues there's going
to
be next year.
I have to believe that they're going to find a place, because it's sitting so poorly with everybody right now that they're getting, like, kicked out of the Power 5, so to speak.
Yeah.
That – I just feel like because the networks are the ones driving all this, are ultimately going to get pressured into finding some cash to, like, make this happen, like, get these guys on board, make it happen. I mean, I think the Big 12 is really the only option, right? I don't think the Big 10 is going to get bullied into that.
Oh, I wouldn't think so.
But I think the Big 12 might. And
I think so too.
That seems like a great landing spot for them. I hope that's true. And I certainly would be telling recruits, No, we're going to the SEC, man. You kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, you got to come here. We're dialed for next season. Like, we're ready to go.
I mean, they got to be an attractive proposition, I feel like, because because they're competent, but they're only ever going to be so competent. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they've got a ceiling that they've had in the modern era, where they had, like, the three consecutive 10-win seasons, but also they lost to Washington every one of those years. You know what I mean? Like, they're maybe one year the stars aligned and they put it together. And certainly, you know, they've certainly had teams that would have qualified for a 12-team playoff before.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fascinating thing is, like, they haven't won the Pac-12 since 1997.
Yeah.
In the modern era, we'll call it, whenever they split up into divisions, you know, the North and South Division, they never won the North Division. They've never played in the conference championship game since it's been initiated. So like you said, I mean, they punch above their weight in terms of resources and location. I still think the population, like the attendance problem is a big one, man, because it's like, I get it. It's hard to get there, but there's a lot of Cougs. You got to have more than 25,000 people at your football games. Like, you just can't, like, that's just not Power Five.
Yeah.
You got to get 30,000, like, minimum. Like,
that's all that place holds.
It holds 33. And last year, I looked it up. Last year, the only game they played in Martin Stadium that had more than 30,000 was the Apple Cup. Every other game was below that, and they ended up averaging about 25. You know, like,
I'll take 25 if you actually get the butts in the seats.
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to get to 30, man. I think you got to get, you got to find a way to get that extra 5,000 people on the road to get in there, because there's too many other schools, like Kansas State gets 55 somehow. You know, it's just like, these are also smaller, you know, smaller farming communities that are kind of out of the way, and they can get 55,000 people. I'm not saying you got to get 55,000, but I'm saying, like, you got to get close to 30, you know, like, and it just seems like the number to me is 30. But in any event, Cougs punch above their weight. They need to, like, find a way to win the conference, like, once every 20 years, though. And they're not – right now they're falling a little behind on that.
And they're not doing that. So Cam Ward's monster tour goes into Pasadena. Dante Moore and UCLA licking their wounds a little bit. You know, they're coming off – they must have been on bye last week, eh?
Yeah, they were. Both were.
Yeah. Okay. So this Washington State team that I've really been riding with, we have a line of UCLA -3.5. This is going to be, I'm going to pick against the Cougs for the first time this year. I'm going to take the Bruins.
I'll take the Cougs. You've made a lot of hay on these Cougs and me going against them, and they just keep winning.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I was very, very surprised with the Cougs, when the way they played Oregon State. They took the lid off Oregon State's defense just, like, from the get-go, and Oregon State never could figure out how to stop it.
They can really score.
Yeah, came back at the end and kind of made it look closer than it was with that 35-38, you know, final score.
Yeah.
But it really was like WSU's game the whole time. I was stunned by that, and their defense is, you know, perfectly adequate. I don't think Dante Moore is going to be able to hang with Cam Ward. I'm going to take the Cougs.
Next up at 3:30 on the Pac-12 Network, we've got Colorado and Arizona State. Colorado is probably first foray to the Pac-12 networks in the Dion era, I would think.
Yeah.
The first time they're not the national television game at noon.
Big noon Saturday, following them around for the fifth consecutive week, and then kicks him over to, you know, the Pac-12 Network. Lincoln Kennedy on the call. Colorado.
Ready to meet Ashley Adamson, who I don't mind at all. I hope they, like, keep some of those people for Big Ten people to cover the stuff out here.
I would assume they would. I'm assuming that we'd probably, like, see some more people hired, because they're going to be like, you don't have enough.
Yeah.
So Colorado's 4-point road favorites. ASU, yeah, like I said, quitted itself all right at Cal last week. What do we think about these Colorado Buffaloes? I'm gonna take the Buffs here.
Arizona State could win this game. I'm gonna take the Buffs also.
Oh, they sure could. I mean, the problem I have with Arizona State is they couldn't even beat Cal last week, and we saw Cal the week before that in Husky Stadium. They were the worst team I've ever seen in my life. Like, they were,
we saw Stanford on the schedule, don't we?
They're not great either, but yeah, I mean, I the only in-person team I've seen where I'm like, this is not a competent operation was Cal, and then Arizona State went and lost to them the next week. So to me, it's like Colorado's got enough talent, you know, to take these guys out. I know Kenny Dillingham's like, you know, running around and rah-rah and all that, but I got to see it. So I'm going to take the Buffs also.
All right. I like it. I think it's a good pick. Next up, Oregon State and California. Oregon State on the road, which I guess doesn't really matter because it's not like a harrowing environment, but they are laying 9.5 to Cal.
I'm fine with that. 7 o'clock kick, right?
Yeah, to the end of the Pac-12 triple header on Pac-12 Networks. This is a pretty dire week of games. I mean, it's really Washington State, UCLA is kind of the only game.
Yeah, you're going to be done middle afternoon. You're done needing to watch West Coast football. Unless, I mean, Tedford, I guess, is playing Wyoming. Fresno, Tedford. We should have put the Fresno State, Wyoming game in here and picked that because that's the best game of the week.
I might find out what time the Eastern game is because my daughter's soccer game is like pretty early on Saturday, so I'm going to really have some time to watch. Shame that I'm going to have to waste it on this garbage.
Yeah, I'm taking the Beavs here. What do you got?
I mean, I'm going to take the Beavs also. I really want to talk myself into Cal, but nope, I'm switching. I'm going to take Cal.
Yes.
Here's why.
Yes.
Beavs are on the road. And Oregon State, 9.5 is a lot of points for Oregon State to be given away.
Yeah, it is. I agree with that.
Jaden Acho. Cal's going to shorten the game. Sam Jackson's going to, you know, extend a couple drives with his legs.
Okay.
And we're just going to get inside the number. I'm not saying Cal's going to win. We're just going to get inside the number. It's going to be uncomfortable for the Beavers.
Totally possible. Totally, totally feasible. I can see it happening.
All right. And then Arizona and USC is the final game on the schedule of real crummy week in the Pac-12. USC are at home. They are 21.5 point favorites. To me, the question is USC, what are we, 5 games into the season? I'd like to see their team stats.
They're good offensively. They're bad defensively.
So how many games have we played? We played 5 games. Yeah, I mean, I think the difference between them and Washington, because I'm imagining Arizona's going to employ a version of the same strategy they just used against Washington. It's right. It's like, please, dear God, anybody but Caleb Williams beat us. But I think USC is better on the ground than Washington is. Now, Washington, I don't know how good their defense is, but I think it's better than USC's. Washington certainly has like some components. You know what I mean? Like we got edge rushers. We got some interior line guys on defense that are like the proper size and occasionally flash as if they are capable of being dominant. I don't know about for an extended period of time.
Yep.
I mean, USC, I'm assuming, has better athletes at every position than Washington. But why are they so bad?
I don't know. I think, like you just mentioned, I think Arizona's defense is just, like they're just going to play the same version of what they just did.
Yeah.
And Arizona's going to extend some drives and score some points. I think USC is going to win this game comfortably. The number is just too big for me, so I'm going to take Arizona. I think they could win by 18, you know, the way Washington was on. You know, Washington should have beat Arizona by 20, right? They should have gone in. They should have been up 37-17 or whatever it was, or 34-17, you know, and they're covering the 18-point spread at that point, and that should have been that. They didn't. So maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I think Arizona's just going to – try and shorten the game, play umbrella, take points off the board, try and score as many points as they can to keep pace. They won't be able to, but I could see them losing by like 17 points. But spread's 21.5, so I'm going to take Arizona.
I'll take USC just to say that like Arizona is kind of like their luck runs out in terms of the turnovers and stuff like that, and USC just floors them.
Totally feasible.
I probably lost most on picking USC this year.
Yeah, they don't. Here. Yeah,
we like them not covering against people.
You that's 2 of your losses. You picked USC there. That didn't work out
for us.
They didn't play the week before that, so we couldn't lose on them. Where did they go here? I'm trying to see here. Where are we?
I just don't have the bead on them. I keep thinking they're going to have one of these. You know, just give me a 60-30.
They Yeah, you're right. We haven't done great picking USC.
Yeah, I think you're right picking Arizona.
I mean, they beat Nevada pretty bad.
Nevada is awful. I think Nevada lost to Idaho.
Yeah.
Shout out to the Vandals.
There might be a week we didn't pick USC. I don't know. I'm like looking at like week three when like the week Washington played Michigan State.
And maybe we didn't pick them.
We just didn't pick them, so we didn't lose that week. And we had 11 games. I mean, I guess that's it. We should have 12, right? All right. Who knows? Yeah, you're right. We haven't done great picking USC. We'll see what happens this week.
So I'll take them one more time.
There you go. Why not?
Anything else?
No, I mean, it's Washington's bye week, Oregon's bye week. It's, you know, those two teams play in a couple weeks. That's going to be the biggest game of the year in the conference, you know, like probably going to get game day. Game day is in a huge fight with Washington State right now, which I'm going to say it right now is like that's going to get resolved on this game day, this coming Saturday, because they have to resolve it, because if they don't, then they come to Seattle for game day. Oregon, Washington State fans are going to show up and ruin it. Like, they don't want to be.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't even blame them. So they don't want to be on bad terms with WSU going into a game day game. That's in Seattle. I guess it's between like Washington and Oregon and USC Notre Dame, which I gather, you know, like I understand under normal circumstances, that's USC Notre Dame all day. But apparently they've already gone to two different Notre Dame games. They've gone to a game in South Bend, and then they went to the Notre Dame-Duke game as well. So this would be a third trip in a season for Notre Dame,
yeah.
Which, you know, I don't know. ESPN doesn't have a lot of, you know, like they're not trying to hide it, but it feels like that would be a lot in, you know, the first half of the season. So odds are that it's going to be UW-Oregon, and they need to be on good terms with WSU when they come out to Seattle, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think they've treated them like garbage. You know what I mean? I will say about that is, you know, Jake Dickert has his comments the week before or after the Washington State-Oregon State game when they're like, you know, Lee Corso, you know, was basically being disrespectful towards the school.
Yeah.
You know, then you got Desmond Howard last weekend on game day talking about how, oh, this makes Washington State seem small and petty and stuff like that. It's like,
and McAfee went all in on him.
Yeah. Your bosses just kicked them out of college football and you're doing a segment saying what? They should be grateful?
Yeah.
You're the ones doing a segment about this. If they don't matter, then shut up about them.
Yeah. I mean, game day sucks. I mean, the heyday of college game day was Reese Davis, you know, Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit, right?
Yeah.
Before it turned into a fucking circus.
Yeah.
Before it turned into like the aerial cams and all of the signs being the only thing, you know, and you got, you know, Tom Rinaldi every week with some in-depth coverage where, you know, his voice comes in over some soft music and, you know, like you got that whole circus thing going. And now it's just totally off the rails because McAfee sucks. Desmond Howard isn't great. Herbstreit's still there and Reese Davis is still there, but it's, I mean, when was the last time you watched game day? I don't watch it. I mean,
Put it on every now and then. And like, you know, you're not allowed to say that you don't want to keep watching Lee Corso die on television, but I don't. Okay.
I respect his
awesome career. He was so fun to watch in my youth. He is like, you know, the things people say about our president, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There they are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, he's 88, right? He's 88 years old.
Yeah,
like,
and it's fine. And it's normal for him to be like that. What does he have on the executives at ESPN?
I have no idea. Yeah, I mean, I don't watch game day anymore. Like I said, it jumped the shark a while ago. And I just don't understand why they're fighting with WSU. It doesn't make any sense. But I do believe we're going to get a very sincere – they're going to do a segment on him this week. McAfee's going to say he's sorry. They're going to go find the Coop flag in the crowd and congratulate him. Like, they're going to do a lot of hugging this week to be on good terms if they plan to be in Seattle next week, because they know full well you can't show up in Seattle where half the Coop fan base lives if they're all pissy with you, because it's going to be a bad show. Like, it's not going to go.
Or like Lee Corso is going to get a bag of piss thrown on his face. Like, and I don't think, I want to be clear, I don't think that should happen, but I think we're, I think, you know, I think it's a possibility.
That happens at Oregon games, like, regularly, and this is an Oregon game. Like, you don't want, like, you don't want to be bringing Lee Corso into a hostile environment like that. For game
I mean, this is a full-on road game for him, if they do indeed come to Red Square.
Yeah.
All right. That does it for this week's Eligible Receivers. For Eric, I'm Warren. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will see you next week.